You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Our conference champions in their hearts.
From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's Around the NFL Championship Sunday edition. I am Dan Hansis. I am joined by heroes, Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. Gentlemen, it is set 2 weeks from tonight, 3:30 p.m. Pacific kickoff on Fox Television, State Farm Stadium, the setting in Glendale, Arizona, the Kansas City Chiefs against the Philadelphia Eagles, two 16-3 teams, two number one seeds for all of the proverbial marbles. Let's go.
Let's go. This is exciting. It also feels like the finality of it is very sudden. We're coming off this AFC Championship game that we're going to get into it, but it does feel crazy that like this is our last time here recapping games for the season. We'll be at State Farm Stadium. And you could have played out the whole season, or you could have just read the NFL.com Super Bowl predictions before the year and just skipped it all, and you would have seen I had Chiefs over Eagles over Chiefs.
It somehow comes down once again to Greg talking about Greg and Greg's picks.
At the top of this show, especially.
That's what makes it funny.
That's disturbing to me. But you know what? You did pick that. And I think you had, in an even bolder choice, Patrick Mahomes as MVP. Another victory
for you. That's true. That's true.
How do you come up with these picks anyway?
I guess we can skip the next 2 weeks of predicting the game and talking about it since we know what's going to happen.
So here we go. We're going to go over both games today in detail. The second game, the game that just wrapped before we came on today, absolutely the better game of the bunch. But don't tell Eagles fans that. They love the first game against the 49ers. Of course, it's one of those games where you got to give credit to the winner. But as a football fan that is just agnostic on this, you wish you maybe saw something different. You wish you saw a full-powered Niners team against a full-powered Eagles team. But sometimes the football gods don't give us what we want. But again, Eagles fans don't care, and nor should they. Let's head to the link.
It is second down and five. Hurts gives it off against Sanders. Five into the end zone.
Kelsey. Jason Kelsey. What an unbelievable job. Kelsey, Jordan Mailata off that left side.
And Miles Sanders scored his second touchdown of the game and the second of his career in the postseason.
That was Merrill Reese and Mike Quick, WIP. Miles Sanders, have a day. Kid, two touchdowns on just 11 carries. Jalen Hurts threw 120 for 121 yards. That's all right. Didn't need to do much because the Philadelphia Eagles overwhelmed the San Francisco 49ers 31-7. They are back in the Super Bowl for the fourth time, the second time in, I believe, 5 years. And you know what, Greggy? Credit to the entire organization and start for me anyway, with Howie Roseman, whew, Jeffrey Lurie, of course, the team owner. This is the first team in NFL Super Bowl history to get back to the Super Bowl within a five-year span with a different quarterback and head coach. It was once, of course, Doug Peterson with a combo of Carson Wentz and, of course, Nick Foles, and now Nick Sirianni, Jalen Hurts to the big dance.
Yeah, I, as you guys know, I'm loyal to football, so this game was a disappointment to be one-sided, but I don't want to start with the disappointing aspects. I want
to
start with
loyal to football.
The ways that I think the
very
Eagles...
Greg-centric start to the program.
This game. I know I'm enjoying it.
I'm surprised you started with us, with me. Their pass rush dominated. Like, that...
Started with us.
Well, it started with me. Yes. Yeah. I'm surprised. I'm so surprised we're starting with this game because it now feels like such an afterthought in this game because of the injuries and everything. But I think what shouldn't get lost is that the Eagles' two lines won their battles. And so even if the 49ers had stayed healthy, we'll never get to see that game. I don't know what it would have been, but I know that the Eagles' defensive line housed the 49ers early and often. Early second quarter, they already had three sacks. The two injuries that the 49ers quarterbacks had, unfortunately, came because they couldn't protect their quarterback. And it's been a near historic Eagles pass rush all year, Mark. 70 sacks in this season, three guys getting over 10 sacks. And to me, that was the reason why the 49ers were going to have big-time trouble winning this game, even if they kept their quarterbacks.
Yeah, when you get this version of Hassan Reddick and Javon Hargrave and the rest, I mean, they made life very difficult for the Niners out of the gate. I think no matter who was at quarterback, it would have been a different environment than we've seen San Francisco thrive in the past. Philly, I mean, I guess, you know, critics of the Eagles will say, you got a totally down on their luck Giants team a week ago, and then you got this version of the Niners. I kind of don't really care. It's not really the way I see this, because the Eagles simply have performed at a super high level almost this entire season. They've been one of the most consistent teams. What happened today doesn't diminish that for me. Although I think if you're a Niners fan, we were basically robbed of what would have been, I think, a titanic game, because San Francisco's defense, I mean, they could do nothing on offense, but their defense kept them in this for a stretch of time. But then when you get Brock Purdy back in there, and it's clear he can't throw. They're a one-dimensional team, and they're just essentially handing the ball off as the clock is ticking down. That's not an NFC title game. That intrigues me.
Yeah, so this game is, it really gets decided very early on. You have a fourth down and three near midfield. Jalen Hurts, they stay on the field. Sirianni goes for it because that's what the Eagles do. They're an aggressive team. Throws a nice ball downfield. Devontae Smith makes an amazing acrobatic play. Not a catch. Very close to a catch, but the ball is moving as it's touching the ground. Terrible job by somebody. And somebody could tell me who did a bad job here, because you could say it's Kyle Shanahan for not recognizing Devonta Smith in a kind of a panic, telling his teammates to huddle up and get the playoff. Always a pretty clear indicator to me when the receiver's doing that he doesn't think he caught that ball. But how about this, Greg? And we've talked about this all season, that almost every play is reviewable now. Because the eye in the sky and the NFL's new method, which is ceaselessly explained as being this great benefit to the league and has helped the games. And I agree. Like, where is the stoppage in the play from that end of things also? That bottom line, and we saw it again throughout today, just like we've seen it throughout the season, the officiating's not up to snuff. A huge early turning point in this game is on a catch that actually wasn't a catch. I just want to start there in terms of breaking down the game itself.
I think we should go through the whole game, because it was closer than, now you look at the final score, 31-7, and what happened to the quarterbacks, it feels like it was predetermined.
We'll
but it was
there.
Closer for a while. It was fourth and three from the 35 on that play.
Okay, 35.
He throws a good pass, considering he was rolling left. The play looked over to Devontae Smith, who makes an even better catch, or so we thought. I don't blame anyone here. I really don't. He caught that ball and hit the ground with about 10 minutes, 22 seconds or so left. They had the next snap on a no huddle 20 seconds later. And we got one replay. So that's what Kyle Shanahan's basing it off of. And by that replay, there was no way to tell that he didn't actually catch it. And I think Greg Olsen in that moment saying, what a great catch, absolutely influences the 49ers from not challenging it, because they didn't see anything. And sometimes when Jim Nance says, oh, I don't know if that was a catch, then they end up challenging it. So I don't really blame Shanahan. But I have a hard time blaming like the NFL for not quick spotting that, because can they get all the angles in that quick of a time? I think it was just like a bang bang play, and they did a good job hurrying up, and it's unfortunate.
What I read, the NFL, this Hawkeye technology feeds almost virtually all the replays back to their command center. This is the only game being played. Whatever it wasn't seen. They score a touchdown, the Eagles.
Right, we saw the replay like 40 right. seconds later.
So I'm just saying that, you know, and I think it was more like if you're a Niners fan, just Devontae Smith's reaction. Maybe in the first quarter, the first half, maybe, you know, we stop playing and take a chance because that's such a huge play in the game. Then on the sixth play from scrimmage for the Niners, Brock Purdy gets hit. I think it's Hassan Reddick, who has been playing out of his mind. Bends his elbow back. He's out of the game. And it's just crazy, Mark. And he does come back in an emergency scenario, and it turned into farce at that point, unfortunately, that is now a Niners team that had won, 12 straight games, that was in the NFC title game, had lost their third starting quarterback to a potentially serious injury, this time with the timing at its worst. And to the credit, and this is to Purdy's credit, the way Josh Johnson looked in this game, which is – like what a lot of guys deep on the depth chart at quarterback usually look like. I think that's what a lot of people expected Purdy to look like, and we thought the Niners season would have been over 7 or 8 weeks ago. That's what usually when a deep backup comes in the game, they couldn't get anything going once Johnson was involved until he went out of the game.
No, I get you hit the point where Kyle Shanahan and the creativity and the acumen and the experience of tutoring and growing quarterbacks couldn't do anything at this point. I mean, Brock Purdy, we all wondered, would he melt down? It's just a game that leaves a lot of unanswered questions. It's the game that we'd want to see what would have happened here, because I also think the thing that had nothing to do with Brock Purdy on another level, though, was that the Niners, for the first time in a while, I thought they were totally unhinged on defense with the penalties. I mean, they kept Eagles drives alive. There was the roughing the punter penalty that kept things going. Hufanga had a big one. There was a personal foul, a string of personal fouls, and a face mask on Dre Greenlaw that just kept the Eagles alive. And really, if you had taken some of that away, I think this game is a little bit different, but you can't get past the quarterback injuries.
Right, because after that touchdown, to be fair, Dan, the 49ers defense forced 3 straight punts.
Right.
And they allowed a total of 13 yards on those possessions. Now, the 49ers offense is dealing with Purdy's injury. And again, that came from a good player, Hassan Reddick, taking advantage of how they set up their defensive line and that a tight end was blocking him. So that's coaching, that's execution, that's player, and that helped get, unfortunately, Purdy get hurt, but hit. That would have been a fumble either way, a turnover. But then the 49ers go and make a touchdown drive. They trust Josh Johnson a little bit. He makes a couple plays, Purdy is out at that point. They get the touchdown after McCaffrey runs him over. It's 7-7.
That was a great run
and,
by McCaffrey.
You know, as someone who's rooting for the Eagles here, I'm actually feeling quite nervous at that moment. It's fourth down. It's on the Eagles 35. God, they're going to punt it away again. 4 straight punts where they don't even get a first down. And that's the moment where, not to our surprise, Nick Sirianni goes for it on fourth down. In almost any other coach in the league, I don't think goes for it there. Certainly 10 years ago, no coaches would have gone for it. He picks it up. They end up getting the touchdown later that drive. And to me, that's like where the game changed right there. And if he had blown that, let's say, and it had gone sideways from there, people would be killing Sirianni. And yet I don't feel like in these scenarios anyone gets any credit for going for the fourth downs.
No, I totally agree with that. And so the game is 14-7. They're still all right. They're okay. The Niners have the ball with 2 minutes to go. Down 7, and then again, you know, Josh Johnson has been on 100 teams by now, and you can't kill the guy because there's a reason why he's hanging around the league this long. He must be a really good guy behind the scenes and someone you want in a quarterback room, but that's a killer turnover then, a snap that goes right off his hands. He kind of goes down to get it. He has the opportunity to pick it up, but it doesn't work out. Turn it over. The Eagles go down the field again and score. And it's 21-7, and it kind of felt at that point that the game was over.
Yeah.
And it basically was at
that point. It was, because there's no way out at that situation with what you have going on at quarterback. And, I mean, it goes beyond just the turnover, too. There were 3 delay of game penalties. They just were disorganized. It's like you can't run your offense, and it was only a matter of time because, yes, the defense was doing all it could, but you're watching. If you're the Eagles' defense, you're thinking, wait a minute, there's no one in this game that can really throw the ball. Then when you bring Brock Purdy back in, it's like you're essentially playing a Pop Warner attack at that point.
Well, that the game's over at that point. But I do think it's worth pointing out that you're right. There were all these penalties that helped the Eagles get that touchdown to make it 14-7 after the fourth down conversion that I'm talking about. None of the penalties were, and I've seen a lot of complaining today, and there was some bad calls, and 49ers fans complained. All those penalties were clear and obvious penalties.
Oh, I think so, too.
They were good calls. I've seen a lot of criticism being like, why is Kyle Shanahan being aggressive in that two-minute scenario? And I think it's just anger that, like, we have to get mad at something or someone. The first play of that drive, by the way, is a nice throw by Johnson, first down to Samuel. At that point, it's kind of go time. The next play is a perfect shotgun snap, and he
just
fumbled
it. Execute.
Like, if they were being as conservative as possible, he could have fumbled the snap, too. It was just a fumbled snap, which you hate to see a game kind of end on that. And I know the 49ers defense played pretty well, but there's no rule they have to allow the Eagles to run right through them there, that either of the two rushing touchdowns in the first half were absolutely untouched. When this game was in doubt, the first eight drives, the Eagles had 130 yards rushing, which would have been the third highest the 49ers gave up all season, just in those eight drives. So they were getting it done relative. It wasn't easy, but they were moving the ball somewhat on the ground.
Let's hear from the quarterbacks on both sides. Let's start with Jalen Hurts here. Hurts, who didn't have a big statistical game, but you could just see it in these 2 weeks, the way the team responds when he's out front and he's leading them. There's a great shot of him after the game, kind of alone, going through his phone, smoking a cigar. This is Hurts's time, and he'll be a big story this week. And it's easy to forget now that when he was drafted, the Eagles had Carson Wentz, and the idea was that they kind of were set at quarterback. And that obviously is something that motivated Hurts, because he made a passing comment earlier in the press conference about how, you know, some people, they didn't want to draft him to Philly. And then he was asked a follow-up about that off-the-cuff remark.
You know, there was a big surprise to many. But my favorite verse, you know, I went through a lot of stuff in college, and it kind of stuck with me. John 13:7, you may not know now, but later you'll understand. Hopefully people understand.
Smooth. He says that in a purple leather jacket, straight out of like Prince's World Tour in 85. It's working. It's all working for Jalen Hurts right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that, you know, a year ago, he was still essentially on audition for this job. I think now he's my second choice for MVP. I mean, I know he missed a couple games at the end and it's played through this injury, but you mentioned this, Greg, last week, is that it is the player, but it is like the Eagles made this choice at quarterback. And they moved away from Carson Wentz. You got this player, but I think they talked about his leadership and who he is the entire time. This was not a great performance by the Eagles offense for much of the game. Their first half, they essentially was their fourth worst performance in the first half all season. That's something to do with the Niners defense, but it wasn't them.
In terms of what?
Well, just like efficiency and stuff. It was just sitting out there. And it's like, this was not the high-powered version of Philly. It really wasn't. I think that it gives me hope that in the Super Bowl, you might get that version against the Chiefs.
Right. I think, to be more specific, and this is just my take personally, and I know the rushing numbers aren't crazy. They ended up 3.4 yards overall, but they had some big plays. I think it was just a subpar performance by Hurts specifically. I think he was struggling to stay calm in the pocket. He wasn't accurate. He had that go ball to A.J. Brown on the second drive of the game that would have made it 14-0, just missed it, had another ball way out of bounds on a go ball that like ended a drive. He just didn't seem to be ready for whatever the 49ers defense was showing him. And he was not the first one. This is a great, great defense. And I think D'Amico Ryans was mixing it up. But the pressure, even when the pressure wasn't there, I think their plan really was confusing him. And he had a 4.8 yards per attempt in this game. So he struggled to pass the ball, especially in the first half. But it was his legs and better decisions in the second half that kind of calmed
the game down.
Well,
if you take away that Devontae Smith catch, right?
Right.
His numbers, he finished with 36 yards. That was a 29-yard catch. A.J. Brown had four catches for 28 yards in the first quarter, essentially, and then never had anything else. It's like, we're used to seeing, when Hurts has been on, the big plays down the field. Guys like Charvarius Ward, who played an awesome game, lost in this disaster of a situation for the Niners, took that away. I mean, this just was not the Eagles offense we're used to seeing when they're at their best.
The Niners and Eagles QBs combined for 204 passing yards, the lowest in a conference title game since the 1982 AFC title game.
That I mean, one of the quarterbacks literally couldn't throw, so that's right. I'm not totally surprised. But
right, that was the famous Mud Bowl, Jets and Dolphins. Brock Purdy couldn't throw. Here are his comments about the state of his arm after the injury.
You know, my arm just felt like it stretched out. Just felt like really a lot of just shocks all over from my elbow down to my wrist, front and back. Just pain, really.
And this is where it kind of got sad, to be quite honest with you, because we had all kind of enjoyed this rise of San Francisco's offense in the CMC Purdy era. Josh Johnson bangs his head on the turf in the third quarter. They blow the game dead. He goes to the blue tent. He's done. He's diagnosed with a concussion. They have to bring back Purdy. Even after there's discussion, is Christian McCaffrey going to be the quarterback? Is Kyle Juszczyk going to be the quarterback? They bring Purdy back, and there's a chance Purdy blew out his elbow. We don't know yet. We're going to have a better idea how serious this injury is. But he goes back on the field, and he explains the conversation he has with Shanahan about how bad it is and whether he can throw. And he's even sheepish, almost apologetic about what the state of his arm at this juncture of the season.
Yeah, I told him right there, if we run a play, you know, I can't throw it deep. Like, just for this play at least, like, it's hurting really bad. And, you know, if we're going to get a completion, have it be something short, if that's all right. And so that's really what I was telling him.
If that's all right. How sad. It's sad. It's a bummer.
It's I mean, I thought it's been one of the best stories of the year and so improbable. And to end this way, again, it's just like the game is just filled with what ifs to me. And like, I almost would have rather that you, and I think like if you're Christian McCaffrey, there was especially during like if you're watching the truck feed, which we do on MVP in our office, like he was sitting there looking at a huge play sheet, and I could see the look on McCaffrey's face, sort of like, wait a minute, I might be playing quarterback here. The guy's been on the team for like a couple months, right. You know.
This is the game to decide who's going to the Super Bowl, and the running back is looking at the quarterback play sheet. It's just the way it is. And yeah, like the Giants, you said they were kind of down in their luck. The Giants are feeling good against the Eagles, but they were clearly outclassed. The Niners, this is a whole different situation. Like, the Eagles absolutely caught a break here. I think the Eagles are going to win either way, but we'll never know what would have happened if these two sides were at equal power. You hear the frustration in a guy like George Kittle, who's had a big year with Purdy, and having to answer questions about the situation and how things played out.
How does that feel to lose in the NFC Championship game because I don't have a quarterback? Pretty to be honest. Yeah. About it.
It's fair.
It is.
Two
fair.
Straight years. I mean, this team looking at Shanahan on the sideline as you just, I guess he always looks like that, but it's just like, I was just like thinking of what he is thinking as he's calling these running plays in the fourth quarter of the, and just thinking how the injuries have defined his time in San Francisco, especially at quarterback when Jimmy G first got hurt. And all the quarterbacks that they went through, they were healthy in 2019. They lost that one with a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. But then you think the injury the next year. And then you think last year, Jimmy G playing through injury was the worst version of Jimmy G in blowing the 10-point lead in the fourth quarter of the NFC Championship game. And then this. And you hate to like no one likes to hear it when their teams win, especially, or just anything. But it's like sports are very often about luck. And championship teams, the greatest players ever benefit from that. It's just part of it. Like, you got to take advantage of it when you have that opportunity. The Eagles earned that one seed by having the best record in the league too, and setting all of this up. But luck is part of it, and that was terrible luck for the 49ers.
They've had awful injury luck under Shanahan, and he's had to perform all sorts of acrobatics at the quarterback position for years on end. And it's like we spent all last offseason wondering if it would be Jimmy G or Trey Lance. And now you go into another offseason and we'll get into all that. But it's like, what? Like, there's a lot of questions at quarterback and what you do with a young rookie who looked fantastic.
If this is a serious elbow injury for Purdy, that, I mean, it just keeps getting worse because then.
Right. And he's got an MRI tomorrow. Yeah, so
everything
we'll,
is snowballing.
Yeah.
And everything will roll into next season. They don't get a true fresh start next year. Any other thoughts kind of on this game before we move on?
I think this game, and maybe we'll talk about more in the coming weeks, but I do wonder if the NFL is going to look more closely at changing the rules in terms of the rugby scrum and being able to push the quarterbacks.
What do they call it? The butt?
The butt push?
Well, it's like, a double cheek because you got two guys pushing Hurts. It's like a double cheek push.
Again, it was early in this game when we didn't really know what the final result was going to be. You never know with Josh Johnson. I mean, it is crazy looking at the final stats. The Eagles average under 4 yards per play. They still only ended up with 269. I didn't know what was going to happen. And so those short yardage plays with Hurts felt really important, especially on the goal line. And I just sense like the frustration of how effective this. The Eagles are especially good at it, I think, because of their offensive line and because of Hurts. But I expect the rules committee will be talking about this, and we will be talking about it in March when they meet.
It's almost crazy when you see teams, and we've seen situations where it's fourth and a yard, and they're not doing that play, that they're trying something else because the Eagles especially have trademarked that is like the most automatic fourth down maneuver out there. And yet, like, it seems so automatic that I'm with you. It's like, it's something about it does seems a little off base to me.
Usually the way, and one of the like beautiful things about football is there's always a back and forth, like the offense innovates or the defense innovates and then the other side comes back. I don't know if this is something you can innovate because it's so up close and personal, and before you don't even really have an opportunity to find a way to kind of combat it. So maybe it becomes that type of situation. I don't know. Like, the sport has its roots in rugby. Maybe it's a beautiful callback to its ancestors.
It doesn't bother me.
I don't go nuts about it personally.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of like Belichick always had a way of taking advantage of like whatever the rules were.
Sure.
Like, don't break them, but bend them as hard as possible. Take advantage of what the rules are. I think the Eagles have found found something here. Like, they have so many different ways to win games, and that's why I think this win, even though it was too one-sided, was typical for them. Like, any given week, different parts of their team step up and end up winning the game because any part of their team has a chance to be dominant. And that's what's special. That's why they're going there.
That was my thought, too. It's like, I'm not really into hearing about how easy their path was. Like, they didn't choose that. They also had an easier path because they were the best team in the regular season. But automatically, like, one matchup, I know Landon Dickerson was hurt today, but their offensive line versus Chris Jones and friends in Kansas City. But then on the flip side, their pass rushing, their front seven versus a very good Chiefs offensive line. It would have mattered who made it for the AFC because they're so physical. I think the Chiefs have some strengths and some pluses where you can line up against the Eagles, but they have been so dominant up front that I wonder if it starts right there.
Are you insinuating that the game is won in the trenches?
I wanted to insinuate it without saying that. But that's what this game was.
Before we take a break, can we pull up the Empire State Building, which is the most iconic skyscraper in New York City? People should know that the Giants were eliminated in embarrassing fashion by their hated rival, the Eagles, a week ago. And after the game, the Empire State Building sends out a tweet, "Fly, Eagles, fly. We're going to green and white in honor of the Eagles NFC Championship victory." And I know after the Chiefs won, they went red and white, and maybe this was some type of like pre-plan. And then whoever was in the planning meeting was like, didn't even realize there's levels to this. As a New York sports fan, I think about, as someone that lived in Boston, Greggy, in 2001, when they threw Ray Bourque a parade when he won the Stanley Cup championship for the Colorado Avalanche. That's how downtrodden the Boston sports were at that time. New York sports is in such a bad place now. Where is the swagger? Where is the confidence and the belief that you are the sports town and nothing like that would ever happen in your most famous building? That's a disgrace, Empire State Building.
That's a disgrace.
It is a disgrace. And it's just, to me, it was so baffling. Like, we're missing a part of the story. Maybe we'll find out later that there's something to trigger this from a planning angle. But, like, the idea that my first thought was like someone from Philadelphia is essentially violent coup d'etat fashion taking over the nerve center of the Empire State Building.
I'd almost rather it was that.
Right, that would make some sense. What are we doing here from a PR angle?
I believe that the confidence level of the sports area has been so battered by the failure to win titles for the most part in the last 20 years that we've lost our sense of identity. our belief in self and our hatred of outsiders that pretend that they are us, Philadelphia v. New York, this can't happen, and it should never happen again. It should have never happened in the first place. And I'm not even a Giants fan, and it got me mad. Just imagine how Giants fans felt about that.
But hold on, though. But even if you were, you're talking about the fact that the city is psychologically broken over sports.
A little bit.
Okay, but let's say even the reverse were true, and they were psychologically fine. Still, why are you doing this?
I'm
saying it would have never happened.
I know. I live.
The city would be more keyed up and smarter to understand that.
How on earth was this ever thought to be a good idea on any level? Why are we celebrating other cities winning AFC and NFC title games?
I used to live 12 blocks away from there, and it was one of the joys of living there. You always looked up at the end of the day, you see the lights. And, I used to follow that account no more because it's I don't live there anymore. I don't care what the lights are. But the fact that
you're not a New York sports fan, Greg. Of course you are fine with it.
I would have been excited because I like the Eagles because it was such a total blunder.
What are you talking about?
But Greg, you would have. But again, we're not asking what you think.
If you were a Giants fan living in New York, you would look up at the green and white Empire State Building and say, oh, that is unbelievable.
I'm saying if I was living there and they owned themselves that badly, I would have been dancing in the streets because it was like a
disaster. Just like a little dog biting at your ankle. But we're actually just asking how this ever came to be. Not whether or not it's enjoyable.
This is my way of agreeing with you, of course. It's a total disaster. And I have a theory. I don't think they were going to do the Chiefs colors. They weren't going to do it was not a plan that it was going to go, we'll do the winner's colors early and the winner's colors late.
Yeah.
And then they got so much pushback, they realized, okay, here's how we can save it. We'll pretend that hurt us, and we're going to panic pivot.
Talk about creating your own problems, though. I mean, there must be more to this.
I'm just saying, it's hilarious to me. It's hilarious to me as a Patriots
fan. See that? See now? Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, that's what I was. That's what I am.
Okay. But that's not how you said it initially. Yeah. I would feel the same way if I were New England sports. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll take care of some business, and we'll get to the AFC title game. A corker.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky, they're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
My first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my day.
We just took a break, and we're talking about the Empire State Building the entire time. I don't know. I think that's funny. Speaking of green and white and the Eagles, listen, I'm a man of principle, integrity, bottomless integrity. So I can say, what? So I can say.
Greg openly chuckling.
Yeah. So I can say.
He said bottomless integrity. That was intended to get that reaction.
No, that was supposed to be met with a stone face nod.
Yes, of course.
So I can say that I went down in the locks challenge. I like that Eagles team too. I needed something special from the Niners, and what I got was an apocalypse for the San Francisco team. So my time with the trophy is over.
Oh my gosh.
And what I hold in my hand is the Locks title, which I treated with respect and dignity, unlike some other past champions. It's about the trophy. It's about me. But not anymore. Now, it is yours, Greg. And all I ask before I hand over the Locks trophy that you have won fair and square is that you treat it with respect and dignity.
It's a fair request.
Because it is an important part of our program. I put it in a very high visibility spot.
Oh, okay.
In my home studio.
I'm wondering, what are you getting at here?
Yeah.
And I just don't want this to be, because, you know, with Greg, it's like, I put it in my trunk and then I forgot about it. Be proud with this trophy because you did earn it.
I don't think Greg's forgetting about this.
Are you guys going to get the shot where I hand it over like it's on the plane in Dallas at Love Field?
Thank you, sir.
There you go.
Thank you, sir.
Congratulations, Greg.
Lock it up!
You earn it. How many titles is that for you now? Three?
Yeah. I mean, look, you say I don't respect it. Me and this guy spent a whole pandemic together. It's 3 out of 4. You know, I do say luck is a huge part of it, but if I keep stacking these up, I'm going to have to start questioning that theory.
Where are you going to put it in your home?
That theory. I guess I'll have to put it in my shot. I am moving soon, so I'll have to work on that. In the meantime, maybe should we leave it here? No, I'll just leave it.
She's beautiful. You make me look at it.
Next to me.
I mean,
I feel like Joe Burrow.
And I got to say, you know, the luck history was instructive because luck is very important here. Always is. And I like the Eagles, got some injury luck today that helped that game. But part of it was my lock history, that Patrick Mahomes was really the one who put me over the top for those previous locks. And even though I picked the Bengals today, thought they would win, I thought...
Nice setup.
It's just wrong. It doesn't feel right to ever lock against Patrick Mahomes. Never do that.
Right.
If I'm Dan, I've equipped that with a hidden camera.
I do want to see what Greg's doing.
In general, what is Greg doing at his house? I wouldn't always check on it, but I'd check on it occasionally.
So, I don't know exactly what your Mahomes point was there. Stacked wins picking the Chiefs.
In the playoffs, that clinched my previous locks. It was Mahomes in the playoffs finishing out those lock titles for me.
It felt
wrong and foolhardy to go against him, and I would have been wrong.
That part of the speech would have been even more effective if you picked the Chiefs and locked them up today for the title. But
sometimes it's the locks you don't make.
You know what? Good call. And we all thought, old Zeuser included, I had the Cincinnati Bengals number one in the power rankings. Mm. That at Burrowhead Field, Joe, it would be his time. And these players, we could talk about luck and all this stuff. What's momentum? What's not momentum? What is momentum? We could talk about that. But motivation, you cannot discount what players use to get pumped up ahead of games. And you knew the Chiefs did not like everyone going Cincinnati's way and talking about Burrow as the new king of the hill when they had Mahomes to Arrowhead Field.
20-20 tie. 8 seconds remaining in regulation of the AFC Championship game. Harrison Butker, the biggest kick of his Chiefs life. Placement is down. Butker's kick is up. The spinning kick high. 40 in the air. And it is good! Good! It's a field goal from 45 yards out by Harrison Butker. You can doubt the Chiefs. You can dislike the Chiefs. You're going to have to deal with the Chiefs as the AFC champions.
Oh, how about that? Everyone's connected. I'll give them the bang. I'll give them the bongos.
Bongos!
Give him the bongos. Mitch Holtis with the call. Now, I love Mitch. He's off. He's off on this. WDAF. Because, and I'll admit this freely, when the Patriots are winning all these AFC titles and stuff, there was a certain exhaustion that set in for a lot of fans. The Chiefs are a little harder to root against to me. Like, even though I wanted Cincinnati in this game, man, Casey, they've earned yet another trip to the Super Bowl here. On the back of that Harrison Butker field goal with 3 seconds to play after Mahomes scrambled for a first down late in regulation, got pushed out of bounds, one of the costliest penalties in recent NFL history by poor Joseph Asai. 45 yards hook through the up the right uprights. Who? Who?
Sorry, hook 'em, I said.
Joseph Asai?
Yes. Who's even speaking right now? Who would think that Hook'em is worth it in this moment?
Grave Digger, how do you bring up Texas football in this at this stage of the show?
Sorry. I think it's a good bit.
Continue.
This is one of the lowest moments in Texas alumni football in forever.
Poor kid was just trying to make a play.
Edit that out of the show.
The Chiefs win 23-20 to advance to the Super Bowl. Kansas City, Mark, finally beats Cincinnati after three straight losses, including a three-point overtime loss in last year's title game. And before I throw it to you, Mark, when Tracy Wolfson of CBS grabbed Patrick Mahomes on the field to ask him about another big-time win in a what's already a legendary career at just 27 years old, his buddy, Travis Kelce, came in with the interview bomb of the century.
Woo! Burrow hit my ass! Woo! It's Mahomes' house!
It ain't Burrowhead. It's Mahomes' house.
Now, that was a major misstep by the Bengals fanatics and their mayor and everyone else to suggest all this business. Because, yeah, if you're another team in the AFC West or a fan base supporting another team in the AFC West or the AFC, you might have annoyances with Mahomes and the Chiefs and what they are. But give me a break. We spent all week long wondering if Mahomes physically would be up to this game. You know, yes, he was practicing well and moving around, but what happens when you get into this thing with the temperature, what it was, you know, your body's chilling out. Like, Mahomes, to me, this was one of my favorite performances ever for him, and it was filled with so many little moments where, you know, he couldn't move the way you wanted him to. So even before that big run, that scramble that really showed exactly who Patrick Mahomes is, there were how many throws where with guys around him in the pocket, a crumbling pocket, he seemed to almost see through defenders and make these beautiful little dump offs. He had one to Isaiah Pacheco on that final drive. That final drive started with, you know, all his wide receivers are hurt in this game. But neither team's really running the ball very well. He's not able to lean on that part of it. Sky Moore had the huge punt return. That set this thing up. Then you have the Mahomes to the Pacheco thing I was telling you before. There's an incompletion. Mahomes then runs for that first down, and that all of these games like this have that defining moment and that penalty. And I thought Cincinnati went, they dealt, at least this penalty was clean because they dealt with a lot in this game. And Zach Taylor was about to have his head explode. But this was actually a good call. And Joseph Asai goes down in Ohio, Cincinnati playoff history and lore in all the wrong ways for what happened here. Because there's no way that Butker is going to make that field goal, I think, without that penalty.
He hit the bottom of the net from whatever it was.
It would have been close, but
45.
I mean,
it was very cold. I don't know, didn't get a lot of attention, but it was 20, feels like 6.
Freezing.
They said, Jay Feely, your guy, I know you really love the Jay Feely kicking analysis, Dan.
Respect the guy's hustle for getting a paycheck for what he does.
Fair.
He said that,
settings.
That he was only good from 50, most likely. 55 would have been a stretch. And yeah, it would have been, I think, a 60-yard attempt before that. I don't even know if they would have attempted that play, although they might have had time for one more play before that. Just the fact that it came on Mahomes running, and I know it was the penalty that moved. I mean, you almost can't write this stuff. And as much as the Bengals fans are upset with that penalty, are upset with how the rest of this game was officiated, I think you have to look at Patrick Mahomes as a guy who lost Juju Smith-Schuster, lost Mecole Hardman, lost Kadarius Toney, and ultimately their passing attack was a little more effective over the course of the game. He averaged 7.6 yards per attempt. He didn't have an interception. I know he had that fumble where he just lost the ball. But it was a very evenly played game. I didn't feel like the Chiefs stole one. I felt like they just ended up winning it at the end by 3, just like the Bengals ended up winning close games by 3 against the Chiefs previously.
And this is why sports are great. They're unpredictable. Everything did seem to be trending toward this is the Joe Burrow ascension. This is why everyone was confidently saying that this is Burrowhead and he owns Kansas City. And then it gets set up on a platter for them after the big touchdown to make it 20-20. They force a punt, a whole mess of things going on that Kansas City drive. Is that the drive with all the shenanigans with the play that wasn't the play?
Yeah, where he had like eighth down. We ended up being 8 plays, 13 yards.
We dodged a couple. Put it this way. We dodged a couple of bullets of officiating gone sideways where it looked like it was going to have a major impact on the game. And luckily it sidestepped those type of situations. You just wanted to talk about two great teams playing. And that's what we're getting to do for the most part here. But they get two chances with the ball. In a tie game, one possession ends in an interception, and after the Cincinnati defense steps up again and forces another punt, Greg, the Bengals get the ball back. They get, I think, one first down, and then they punt again. And that surprised me, I got to say, because especially the last possession where it's balls in Burrow's hands with 2 minutes to play in a tie game, it kind of just felt like that was the moment. And when they got stopped there and all of a sudden there was, you know, time on the clock for the Chiefs after the big punt return, huge play in the game by Sky Moore, it felt like this thing was going to go a certain way, and it did.
So that second drive, and you're right, they got the ball in a tie game twice in the fourth quarter and couldn't score. And so you have to give the Chiefs defense a lot of credit, give the Chiefs offensive line credit. Other people other than Mahomes lifted up Mahomes, which hasn't always been the case. But on that second drive, Dan, they did have two first downs. They had the 10-yard play to Higgins. They were on their own goal line practically. Then they have the third and 16 after the intentional grounding, which felt like it might be a killer play. And Burrow gets protected, really lets go of the ball, and he did a great job letting go of the ball quickly all game after all those early sacks. He knew he had to get rid of it. Great timing route. They blow the coverage to Hurst. They get 23 yards.
That was incredible.
At that point, we're all, I mean, you already said they're going to go down the field. It's over. At that point,
kiss of death.
I think Chiefs fans, I think Bengals fans, I think America is thinking game over. They have a 2-yard play to Hurst where it doesn't get out of bounds. And that's where
England was like, not quite, Greg and Dan and Mark.
That's the moment where the game kind of changed. And we were talking about it in the film room at the time. It was in a very aggressive timeout by Zach Taylor with 48 seconds left. I think a lot of coaches, and in the moment, I thought, maybe don't take that timeout. That you run the next play 15 seconds later, you kind of play it both ways, you keep your two timeouts, but you make it so that there's no time left for the Chiefs if you don't end up picking up first down. I can't kill Zach Taylor for that at all. Him going for fourth down and like on the fourth and six earlier in the game, him being aggressive throughout this run and trusting Joe Burrow is why they made it this far.
Got it.
So I can't kill him, but him trusting Joe Burrow and trusting his offense and being very aggressive with that timeout is why the Chiefs got the ball back ultimately when the Bengals couldn't get a first down.
And also Chris Jones having the sack of the game. I mean, Chris Jones, like, it's a little, there's so much mechanics around the drives and the quarterbacks, but like Chris Jones absolutely was the star of this game.
And the back history of Jones, he had played in 13 postseason games, zero sacks, and then two tonight.
He was super frustrated last year after that loss. So to come back and do what he did, and I mean, I'll give Zach Taylor another bit of credit because, I mean, this was a tough environment. I think they were sort of saying this was as loud as Romo had ever heard Arrowhead Stadium, that it was on fire, the weather was a factor. And the way that game started, you just sort of could wonder if the Chiefs were just going to run away with it because Burrow behind the line that played so well a week ago was getting destroyed, and it was a total train wreck. I thought the Bengals did a good job down the stretch of adjusting to some of that stuff and adding bulk in the backfield and chipping Chris Jones and others to try to keep Burrow safe, who's so great with the quick throws. But you're right. I mean, they had two chances. This isn't the Josh Allen Mahomes game where you go into the offseason wondering what if Cincinnati and Burrow had one more opportunity, because he was lucky. He threw two picks in this game. That second pick, which was tipped by Brian Cook and landed in the hands of Josh Williams, was an incredible defensive play by the Chiefs. Those guys are rookies. They got a secondary essentially built of rookies and held their own in this thing. And the Burrow's both picks resulted in zero Chiefs points, where Mahomes had that crazy fumble, which was a very un-Mahomes-like play, that led to a Cincinnati touchdown that again made me think, this is just going Cincinnati's way in these little tiny moments. And for Mahomes and the crew to pull it out, it's just another reminder. It's like they're hard to describe because they seem so perfect when they are. Same with Mahomes, but this was a different way that Mahomes won.
This was a resourceful win, like a tough win. I don't think people think of the Chiefs that way. And And of course, they think of him as mentally tough. They came back from 10 down in the Super Bowl to win. But where so much went against them. And the Bengals fans will say, we didn't have our offensive linemen. Sure, but going into this game, not only was Kelce supposedly a little banged up, although he looked fine, and we know about Mahomes, but losing three receivers and L'Jarius Sneed, your best cornerback, all in the game, and to be able to overcome that, it really wasn't just Mahomes. It was the Chiefs defense getting those stops. It was the offensive line doing a great job. Their running game did nothing, but they did a great job protecting Mahomes for the most part. Like, this is a toughness, a resourcefulness that, like, championships are made of, and, like, we're giving all this credit to Mahomes, and we should have given it to him anyways, but if the Chiefs give up a field goal on that last drive, like, we're not giving him all the same credit. So it is a team sport, and he got lifted up by his team more than he has in the past.
Yeah, and we saw that in each of the last 2 weeks,
yep.
Where, of course, Mahomes went down with the injury last week, and they were able to survive. And I thought the Mahomes injury, I thought it was fairly remarkable that for the first at least half of the game, you wouldn't even really know that he was injured because he was making all the type of plays that you're used to him making. As the game went on, especially on one scramble where he threw off on a completion, he had a really drive off the ankle. And that, from that point on, he was limping pretty badly. But this, again, what separates him when you're talking about like Dak last week, what's the difference between the great guys and the good guys, the guys that win Super Bowls and the guys that just make a lot of money and make it to the playoffs every couple of years. He somehow in that physical state is able to turn on the juice and turn that corner before he gets pushed out of bounds, get the first down. And I just have so much respect for Mahomes, the player, and I know I'm not alone.
And I mean, you look at his two touchdown throws, like that first one to Travis Kelce on 4th and 1. Again, I love the aggressive nature of what they did there. That touchdown dart was insane. And then the MVS on the move. I mean, Mahomes, like, found a way to, I'm sure he's in pain because he was hobbling around late in that game too. And yet there was a couple times where he threw off his back foot and looked as good as ever. It's like he just in this moment, I think that's the thing about when you rooted for teams that can't find a quarterback, whether even if they're good, but they're not available half the time, it's like, you got nothing. Mahomes is like available and good, and he's playing through something that would keep other people off the field.
I think he's the best I've seen come into the NFL, and I think this game shows how he's more than just scrambling around. That Kelce touchdown you mentioned, we were commenting, like, look, he had a wide open, it's fourth down, he had a wide open player in the flat. That's where the play call was supposed to go to, but he holds on to it looking for more, and he gets it to Kelce. And then the touchdown to MVS where he moved up in the pocket was a dart, but just a few plays before that on that drive, The one play you're talking about, Dan, on the third down where he plants, he's rolling left, and Romo did a good job pointing out if you have a high ankle sprain, like that's the play where it's really going to hurt you the most, and it did. He's rolling left, throwing right. Like, most quarterbacks can't make that play healthy. Like, I'm a fan of the Patriots. There's no way Mac Jones can possibly make that play healthy. He does it on that injury, playing through the pain, completes it, continues that drive, and then ends up hitting MVS later. That's just next level stuff.
Yeah, and going back to the play you mentioned, like, that's the touchdown is 4th and 1, correct?
Yeah.
Like, that's a 4th and 1 in the AFC Championship game, and you have a guy open in the flat for a 3-yard gain, and this goes back to their, you know, historic connection level. He sees Kelce, who's not necessarily open initially, but he sees him basically one-on-one in the end zone. And he knows Mahomes, I put the ball in a certain spot, 99 out of 100, Kelce's going to give me a touchdown. Those guys just operate on a different level than almost anybody we've ever seen as well. So a lot of, did I mention Travis Kelce talking smack after the game?
Oh.
We saw him do it with Tracy Wolfson. How about the mayor of Cincinnati? Now, we know we have some connections with mayors of Cincinnati. Our buddy Jason, who lived in Cincinnati, moved to Tybee and became the mayor of Tybee. I want to make it clear.
I would say equal power.
It's not the same guy.
Equal power. It's not the same person.
It's not Jason from Cincinnati who became the mayor of Tybee. This is whoever the mayor of Cincinnati is. Maybe Gravedigger helped me out with that. Had some unkind things to say about the Chiefs and some sticking out the chest about his favorite team, the Cincinnati Bengals. Kelce wasn't done during his post-game riser conversation.
Hey, I got some wise words for that Cincinnati mayor. Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni.
I mean, he could absolutely be a professional wrestler. First of all, he's holding the Lamar Hunt trophy while he does it. Then he pulls his hand out to his ear to hear 74,000 Kansas City fans lose their mind over his rock act.
Again, like the mayor, what are you doing like in the week leading up to this?
That's what mayors do. Mayors are the worst. Let's be honest.
I think that it contributed. It's so clear that was like a vital piece of motivation inside the locker room.
I agree. I think motivation, that's one thing you take away from today. Like, these players will look for anything, and I think it goes a long way, especially when you have something like this. This is kind of like a perfect storm. You were able to draw on this motivation that, oh, this team is better. Everyone says this team is better than us. This was the Chiefs, 14 wins. They're in at home, and their quarterback is Patrick Mahomes. So they're able to summon all of that and blast it back. But, Greg, like, ultimately, we say all this.
I'm glad the mayor said it.
I think it makes it more fun.
And it's just fun to dunk on him afterwards. Do I think that affected the game in any way?
Mayor,
no, I do not.
And the mayor would have done a victory lap for three weeks if it would have went the other way. I think that's all good.
Do you think it did? Obviously it rose up enough – like in the sea level to get into the Chiefs locker room. And it's the first thing Travis Kelce mentioned.
Because I'm sure they couldn't wait to talk about all that. And I'm sure like they were talking about it amongst themselves. Do I think that that made any difference in all the like 15 different plays that helped decide this game? Like including, no, I don't think so. I think it's in your heart.
I guess I'm more saying from a like the Bengals a year ago were this wonderful story.
I'm not pinning this loss on the mayor of Cincinnati.
No, not at all. But like they got
just to be
like
clear.
Their whole thing around the Bengals like turned a little bit of a corner the last 2 or 3 weeks, where it's like suddenly they were the favorites going into Arrowhead, and Mahomes was being outshined by Joe Burrow, who the mayor basically said they needed to do a paternity test on Mahomes because he's Joe Burrow's father.
The problem is that he delivered that press conference, that video, with like absolutely zero swag and attitude. If you're gonna do it, you got to do it well.
Are you voting for that guy?
I wouldn't.
I didn't know who the mayor was, so I asked somebody to help me figure it out.
The mayor of Cincinnati is Aftab Purival.
Thank you.
That's
Bridget,
correct.
Unplug her immediately. Thank you. Anyway, other thoughts? What I was saying was, despite all of this, and we could talk about the greatness of Mahomes and how this is really a well-balanced team. It's not just about the quarterback. And we talk about the silent motivations that now came out right after the game. They still just squeezed by Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And if you're a Bengals fan, it's like, man, these are the glory days, but these are two back-to-back. I don't even remember what it's like anymore. It's been so long. But when you become a good team and you get close – and then you get turned back for it to happen twice in a row at this big stage. That's very difficult. That's tough. I feel for the Westlings, everyone in the Cincinnati Zoo, that's tough. And
Spice
they have
rack.
To figure out Spicy.
He did not want. I have the sympathy for Asai. Your heart broke watching him like break down in tears and not leave the bench. Spice Rack, on the other hand, wanted him off the team before the plane leaves. Felt a little harsh.
That does.
Well, if you leave him in Kansas City, he also was injured. So
right.
He also had a great game.
And can we also, like, I know there, I think there was 8 seconds left when the penalty occurred. Mahomes was going to make one more play there in my heart. And I hope Asai realizes that too. And maybe he gets some peace from that.
Yeah,
because ultimately, it wasn't a dirty play. It was a guy that was trying desperately to make a play, but it wasn't a bad call. Mahomes was on, both feet were on the white line. A mistake that can't happen, and it will haunt the Cincinnati fans forever.
I agree. I think Mahomes probably would have found another way to win potentially, but that's not how this works. I mean, Joseph Asai's name is going to go down in infamy, whether he doesn't deserve it as a person, but that's the way this stuff happens. Ernest Biner's fumble, still talked about decades later.
It shouldn't be lost.
Would you like to talk about it?
No, I feel like there's nothing more to say about it, but it colors the rest of your career.
Do you want to hear from Mahomes talking about, once again, the mayor of Cincinnati?
Oh, boy.
In part. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I mean, you got Burrowhead. You said, I mean, they beat us last time. They were talking about we got to play them.
There was a lot of stuff. I mean, the mayor came at me, man. I mean, I understand he's the mayor of Cincinnati, so he has to think about something. But, I mean, it's it's something that you just got to play the football game and then let your play do the talking.
Not since the mayor of Amityville and Jaws has there been such a guy that came out of a situation with more egg on his face.
This guy's having a bad Sunday.
I don't think it should be lost that Sky Moore set that thing up.
Huge.
And that was a really fascinating decision by Andy Reid to put Sky Moore back there. So Sky Moore, who they took in the second round and in fantasy heads, like thought he was going to be a huge asset to their team, kind of ended up being a disappointment, being a fourth or fifth receiver that couldn't get on the field much, was a bit of a disaster as a punt returner throughout the course of the season, kept fumbling. They ended up benching him on punt returns, and Kadarius Toney turned into their punt returner. But Kadarius Toney gets injured early in this game. Poor Toney can't stay on the field. Was out early in this game.
Planted his leg, and it just didn't look right.
And so Moore, as the backup punt returner, gets put in that spot to make the big play. And look, that was the drive, was the punt return. They barely had to move the ball after that.
That
so
brought it to the Kansas
him.
City 47. I mean, if that's a 5-yard return or something like that, they don't win that game. There's not enough time.
You know, we haven't mentioned what the Bengals did well in this game to set it up, because it wasn't running the ball. I was a little stunned how poorly they ran the ball. Mixon was 8 for 19. Burrow had a couple runs. He was their leading rusher by 8 yards.
He had the longest rush on the day.
And the biggest two rushes for the Chiefs, by the way, were their last two plays of the game, a 6-yard run and a 5-yard run. Those were the two longest runs. So no one could run the ball. But the touchdown that T. Higgins had, like skying over Watson, and the fourth down play where Burrow, launches it to Chase, and Chase just has a filthy move to get down the field where he sort of fakes going inside, gets Cook turned around. Like, those were just two plays that I think is what helped make us feel like, oh, the Bengals are going to come win this game. Like, these wide receivers are just too good. They're just such badasses to win like that, that eventually we'll see more of those plays. But it just didn't happen in the fourth quarter.
You hope.
Like, we saw the good Burrow is kind of what I'm saying. Like, it wasn't like
he made
this was a bad
throws.
Game. Yeah. It was a great performance by both of them until the end.
But Joe Burrow's not used to losing. And he's been a winner his whole life. And, he'll have to live with Aaron Donald chasing him down on fourth down at midfield of the Super Bowl. God, those two possessions at a tie game, it was all there for Cincinnati, and once again, they fall just short. And now we get, we have 2 weeks, and we're going to be going to Phoenix. We're going to break down the game.
Let's break it down tonight.
Yeah, we could get into it right now, but I'll just say this. Kansas City, like we said, tons of injuries. Mahomes, clearly still not 100%, far from it. They're going to need every day of this leading up to the game, especially against that Eagles defense that had, I think they're up to around 80 plus sacks now overall in the season.
It's absurd.
It's going to be great. 2-1 seeds will be going at it on February 12th. Hamana, hamana, hamana.
So the Chiefs opened as 1.5-point favorites right off the bat, and immediately all the money went to the Eagles, and now the Eagles are now favored by 2.5 points. Maybe it'll settle down there. But that's kind of like Chiefs Bengals, where it went back and forth. But initially, it almost seemed like people were waiting for the Chiefs to be the favorites, and once they saw it, like a lot of people went Philly. Doesn't really matter. Like, either way, they're barely favored, is what I would say.
I feel like this is a feels like an Eagles by 2.5.
In terms of the betting line.
I think that's where it's going to land, right around there.
That's what it is, at least at this moment. So you've got your finger on the pulse.
They should be favored.
Interesting.
Kelce Bowl. I mean, our old producer, TD, is one of the big winners today because he's, producing their podcast.
We're going to be
Kelce
hearing
Brothers.
So much about that that I'd almost suggest we don't dive into that
anymore. It's literally
the
best thing
tonight.
To ever happen to a podcast is this.
Exactly. Not since the Harbaugh v. Harbaugh Bowl. We now get the Andy Reid versus his old team bowl, Eagles, Chiefs. Let's hear from Big Red.
Yeah, I had a great time there. So 14 years, long time, huh? And I'm happy for them. I'm happy for the city. They're passionate. They love football. I mean, I can't wait till Kansas City and Philly clash. It's going to be awesome, man. I mean, what a great Super Bowl it'll be.
It is going to be a great Super Bowl.
Get ready for that answer like 47 more times.
He'll handle it well. And again, Mitch Holtis, love him. He's not right. I'm not. I love Andy Reid. Love saying he's going to be the big game. Mahomes, like one of the greats. We're going to get to watch him in another Super Bowl. And a little bit of that's an important game in the Mahomes mystique. I mean, he's now gotten back to the Super Bowl for the third time. The true greats. If you want to go get the GOAT, Tom Brady, you're going to have to start stacking titles. And he's just 27 years old. He's got time to do it. Humana.
And if you're Joe Burrow, like you, I know that you've declared the Super Bowl window open eternally for yourself. And I love that he says that, but it gets harder and harder to get back. I mean, this is the difference between, I like to say that football and basketball are completely different, and
you've
same
been known
would apply
to say that
to baseball. But in baseball, you've got like
football
10 days
is
in a series
different
than basketball. You got like 10 days to find out your team is sort of melting down. You can get swept and go to game 7. Football, it's like, bang, it's suddenly over. Morning, bang, it's like one little drive, one little play. It's like,
that's the Niners.
Check you later, Bengals.
They woke up thinking they were going to be Super Bowl champions by 10 plays into the second quarter. It was all gone. It all went gone to dust.
The brutal nature.
I would say nothing has any meaning.
I don't think one player can dominate in football like you can in basketball. But these AFC teams with Burrow and Mahomes, and we'll throw Josh Allen in there absolutely as well. They're all young players here. Like, and then the contracts are going to get more complicated. Burrow might get a contract this offseason. T. Higgins will be coming up soon maybe for a contract. Like, it'll get more complicated. But these teams in the AFC, I know they're not all going to always be three of the final four teams, but I think for the other 13 teams in the AFC, it's a little scary to think about that Burrow and Mahomes and Allen with these good organizations are going to keep getting a crack at it for the next 8-10 years on these teams. It's a little scary.
I hear that. All right, coming up this week, we're going to have Baldy on the show on Tuesday. He's going to give us some X's and O's early kind of breakdown of the
week
to come.
He's like an Eagles expert, too. He's been bathed in Philly Eagles football for
absolutely
a decade plus.
It's a great booking. It always is. We'll have our, as per tradition, don't say the Super Bowl episode next week. And then a week after that, we are in Phoenix to cover the whole thing. A lot of special guests lined up. We can't wait. And before we say goodbye, we can't not bring this up. Mostly, yeah. Usually when it's a birthday, like you give the person a birthday gift.
Mm.
No. Zeus is giving himself a gift because there's nothing that Drew Christensen, our 8'4" video show producer, would hate more than being specifically pointed out that it is his 35th birthday. And if you're, he just pulled off his headset in disgust, wheeling out of the shot on our video program.
That's why you got to check us out on YouTube for this kind of action. But now it puts Parker, you know, front and center. That's great.
Yeah, well, she wasn't front and center when we wanted to hang out with her a week ago.
No show, in fact, a total no show.
Big time no show at our live show. Drew, happy birthday, buddy. 35 years young. 9'11" tall.
Told me he's going ice skating to celebrate.
Well, he's nimble afoot despite being a massive man. All right. Thank you to everyone. Again, February 12th, 2 weeks from tonight, we will know the champion of the NFL. It's all come to this. And it will be our 10th Super Bowl as a podcast.
Wow.
Thank you for the journey, giving us a great life. Can't wait. What game is it? 272? Something like that?
You do the math. You're the
Nailed
math guy.
Don't tell me if I'm wrong. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath,
and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.